Angie has made it easier than ever to hire high-quality pros to get all your home service jobs done well. Just bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie will connect you with local pros who match your specific needs. Or book a service instantly at an upfront price. So join the millions of homeowners who use Angie to care for their homes and get your next home service job done well. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Hi, I am lesbian vampire queen Danielle Radford.
And I'm humanoid dog creature Megan Rosati.
Welcome to Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast, a Stage 13 original series that is an immersion into the unique worlds created by each episode of the hit anthology series on the CW and Netflix.
In each episode of our podcast, we sit down with the Two Sentence Horror Stories creators, as well as celebrity guests and social activists, to deep dive into the social and cultural issues explored on the cult series.
And the carefully intricate craft that went into the making of each episode.
This is Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast.
Looks like you hit something on the road.
Most likely a deer. We got out to see if it was okay, but ran off. You know what? Let's just get out of here.
Probably a good idea. Your type ain't welcome here.
That clip you just heard at the top was from the season 3 episode Teeth. In it, girlfriends Olivia and Kara encounter the less than welcoming locals at a small town gas station. Okay, so before we get into Teeth, Megan, how are you?
Grateful I'm not on any road trips where I have to visit small town gas station.
Also really like cell phone reception and not being pressured into my girlfriend and getting together in 3 months.
big fan of working Wi-Fi over here. Big fan of that.
Oh, I love a Wi-Fi.
So today we're discussing the episode Teeth, where a couple escape to the woods for a romantic weekend only to find themselves the target of a group of bigoted townsfolk.
We need to barricade ourselves upstairs now. We need to get the hell out of here. Kara, I can protect us.
Against a bunch of men and a pack of dogs? How can you protect us from that?
Just do what I say and we will get through this.
You can check out this full episode on the CW and on the CW app. Today on the podcast, we are going to have a discussion about tribalism, the damage othering others can do, and the importance of finding one's tribe. Plus, we'll get the behind-the-scenes details on the season 3 episode, Teeth.
Joining our conversation today, we have GLAAD award-winning journalist Jeffrey Masters and writer and culture critic Clarkeisha Kent.
And later on in the show, we'll be joined by the writer of the episode and season 3 showrunner, Lisa Morales.
Lisa served as season 4 and 5 producer on the popular OWN series Queen Sugar. She also worked on Shameless, Rosewood, and as a producer of the NBC series Bluff City Law.
First up, Jeffrey Masters and Clarkeisha Kent.
Jeffrey and Clarkeisha, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. We are anxious to talk to you about this episode.
We love it. We were so excited to have you guys on. What awesome guests. So just to get the ball rolling, vampires or werewolves?
First of all, thank you so much for having me on. I'm a huge horror fan, so I was eager to jump on this. Now, I would say I have a bias, only in that, like, technically I don't really like any of them. And, you know, some media we've seen with vampires, like, they don't, like, first of all, we don't see a lot of Black vampires, right? So I'm already biased against this, because I'm like, this is not relatable to me, period, right? But other than that, I just, the storyline of, like, you know, old vampire meets like modern girl, love of their life, and the girl be like, I don't know, but like 16, 17, 18, maybe 20 at best. I don't like
yo.
You because you're 500 years old. This is nasty. This nasty girl.
I don't like literally, you. I talk about that all the time because I love the vampire genre, but it's like, the lady vampires have to be like, oh, well, there he goes again. You know, he's 2,000 years old and he's back at the high school. Like, that's gross. You know what I mean? Like, there has to be, like, there is no way that, like, the rest of the vampires don't know who the gross ones who hang out at the high school are. Because those are the only ones they ever make shows about. They don't make shows about, you know, oh, I'm just a vampire chilling in my house and it's hard to be a vampire. And now I'm like dating another lady vampire. It's always like, oh, you 14-year-old, you're the only one who like understands me. And you're so like grown for your age. It's such gross grooming.
It's nasty.
As a straight girl, I would have to turn my male love interest at like 20 and then send him away for a cool 400 years and be like, learn some shit. Figure it out. I've been alive for a long time, so you got to get in there. Jeffrey, what about you? Do you have a preference?
Right, so as the, you know, as we're labeling sexualities as like the gay man of this panel, I have no problem being attracted to older men. And so like everything you're saying, I hear and I disagree with all of it. And going off that, you know, like I'm a big supporter of the bear community and werewolves are like the closest thing we have to that. So I'm gonna go and put my stamp there.
Isn't that, what are the cubs? That's a thing, right?
Sure, yes.
It's like a cute bear. Well, I'm team vampire because dogs frighten me. So I'm just scared of dogs. They're scary.
Whereas, all dogs?
Not if they're smaller than my knee, but I'm only 5'2". So it really takes out a wide range. Danielle, did you make your pick? Did you make an official choice?
I mean, it would have to be vampires. Like, they're super hot, especially in this episode, because I, like, totally got my entire queer life. But also, werewolves. They say all dogs go to heaven, but they don't account for werewolves. Do they ghost to heaven? I don't even know if I believe in heaven, but like, I like the idea that dogs go there.
Well, I will say that All Dogs Go to Heaven was I experienced that as my first horror movie because heaven looked terrible. I did not want to sleep all the time. And then this dog trying to do the right thing by saving his girl ends up in hell. It's a really dark movie. Okay, that's just my personal digression. So we are so happy to have you both on the show. And Clarkeisha, you said off the top you're a big horror fan, which we're so excited to hear. So I'll ask you both, do you have a favorite genre of horror, subgenre of horror? Do you have a favorite horror movie? Do you like jump scares? Do you like dread-filled horror? What tickles your scary button?
I would say I'm a fan of like spiritual / paranormal horror, because I'm spiritual myself. So I like things that deal with not necessarily like, oh, ghosts and whatever, but like, you know, again, spirits, maybe spirits that were left over from some horrible tragedy, because that's a thing, right? Like, I imagine like violence occurring in a particular spot over and over again is going to attract something, right? So that's the type of stuff that I like, because I feel like it's very applicable to this country. So
do we classify The Craft as a horror movie?
Oh yeah,
I do.
Oh yeah, there's witches for sure.
Oh, I love The Craft. Yeah.
So Jeffrey, that's your answer, just The Craft.
if we're going to call it horror, I stand for The Craft all the time. I'm just like a classic like Michael Myers like fan too. Growing up, I was deeply confused because I didn't know the difference between like Mike Myers and Michael Myers.
Oh my God.
So like I finally worked that out. But like a man coming at you with a mask and not knowing his motives or intentions, like nothing scarier to me.
Love that.
Are you deadly, baby? I'm not a good person. Don't encourage that.
It man. Could be argued Austin Powers is sort of a horror movie. I won't digress anymore. Yeah, I'm with you, Clarkeisha. I really like a paranormal. I used to say magic. It's not necessarily magic, but it has to not be in this reality, because then that terrifies me because I can't imagine fighting it. Whereas like if it's a human being coming to kill me, I will kill them. And then if they kill me, then I'm dead at least. But like being trapped in a perpetual hell or like, you know, a Cenobite torture, that is what I find terrifying. But I also love it.
And that's what's great about genre is that you get to tell these different stories about like dread and about how like you feel and how like, you know, would I be able to straight up murder a human, or like, does it have to be something alien? But it is something about horror that allows you to get into these genre stories. What do y'all think about the ability for horror to be able to like tell relatable stories or just stuff about the human condition?
Both horror and comedy, to me, remain one of the most amazing genres of film, TV, doesn't matter, ever, because it requires a special kind of brilliance to, A, you know, make something that you find funny, funny to another person, right? Because we all have different senses of humor. Horror to me is similar because it requires very deft hand. Like, it doesn't matter which subgenre you're doing. It requires that deft hand to be like, okay, so I have this horror story. What is the actual meaning behind it? Because you can do the ghouls and the goblins or whatever, but there has to be that second story underneath, right? I like horror because it just, you can tell like five stories in one horror story. And I don't think you can really do that with any other genre, which is why I get really upset that people are constantly like taking a huge jump on horror and comedy.
I agree with everything you're saying. I think too, like there's like a universality of like in this episode when they're driving up to a dark gas station and then there's a dog barking. I think like that's going to freak out anybody, no matter like your background, your political beliefs. And then also I kind of think there's a way that those like visceral feelings of like the fear, the jump, it distracts from it being two women, right? Mm. And so you're just kind of like obsessed with why is our dog barking and why won't it stop? And not like it's two ladies who are in love. And I think like there is like a weird way that it just transcend borders in that way.
I love that. And I like it because like, you know, my example, Clarkeisha, like you were saying, mine is the zombie movie. It's never about the zombies. A good zombie movie is using the zombies to as an allegory for something else. And that's why I loved zombie movies. That's why George Romero was like, he really got it. And that's why his stuff still lasts today, in my opinion.
So let's just like get into it. What were each of your initial thoughts while you were watching this episode?
I like the like juxtaposition of like the extreme sweetness of this couple wanting to have like a maybe like marriage proposal, and then it goes south in this like scary ass town. But I also really gravitate towards storytelling where halfway through or me in the beginning, you're not sure if there are magical elements or not, or if it like does, as you were saying, like take place in this world. And so I like that as we like went further and further, it like didn't give that away until like the end, actually, that no, this is actually about vampires.
Same, love that.
I like when projects keep the story simple and then kind of add the horror elements as they go. I think any horror that tries to kind of overstuff, like Jeffrey mentioned, overstuff up front, is going to be a horror that falls very flat or falls on its face.
And that's part of what I love about this show, not to be too promo-y, but for me, it always goes one half step beyond what I expect from the conventions of the genre. And I'm such a like horror hound. I'm always like, oh, so he's a vampire. And that's why. And so if I can't figure out whether it's vampires, witches, werewolves, or racists, then it keeps me on my toes and I'm engaged all the way to the end of the episode. So speaking about allegories, what are your thoughts about the behavior of the locals and how they treated our lead couple, Kara and Olivia?
You know, I'm a queer Black woman, and you know, it. I think the experience was very realistic in that, like, okay, what are these white people mad at me about? Is it because I'm gay or is it because I'm Black? Like, it's usually a toss up, right? So that was very relatable for me, especially when her girlfriend asked, "So, like, why are you really mad?" And then she was like, "Let's not even stick around for the answer." No, for real, because it doesn't matter the specific. We know they're mad, so I don't want to be here no more. So
I'm gonna skadoots. Like, it's, that was one of the things I really appreciated about this episode, was that like how much they were like, yeah, we're just gonna go. Like, why are we here? There's no cell service. These dudes are scary. Why are we not skadooting?
It was a good choice that they were not trying to answer that for the viewer, to say like, no, they only hate him because they're like people of color, not queer. I like that.
Well, sometimes you can't tell why people dislike you. Like, I remember one time I went into I was driving through Salton Sea, which is right outside of Joshua Tree, a really small town, a lot of people, a lot of old burnt out buildings. For those of our listeners who aren't, you know, LA hipsters, we had to stop to go to the bathroom, and it was me and my gay friend. I had like, we were taking pictures, like just the most, I had a sparkly scarf around my head. We went into this place. I like peed in a toilet next to like an open bucket with a mop. It like just very, very Hills Have Eyes vibes. And we got out of there and they look at us and they're like, y'all ain't from around here, are you? And I was like, no, we're not. We're just going. Like, I didn't know whether it's because my friend read as queer. I had a sparkly scarf on my head. But it didn't matter. And I think that's why the episode was so good. They're like, it doesn't matter. When people are giving you that scary vibe, you can't stick around to find out.
So I do want to get into the relationship. I cried a little. I did. I cried, Z's. So why do y'all think that Olivia makes this decision to say like, hey, I have this big secret and I know you want to like live together, but I want to keep this from you. And she's obviously being very cagey the entire episode. So why do you think that she's doing that? Why do you think that she's hiding all of this stuff about her past?
I mean, let me preface this by saying that I feel like I don't want to sound like, you know, the old person, get off my lawn type of thing. But I will say that I feel like presently, I think the public is kind of too entitled to people's secrets and backgrounds. Yeah. I will say that first, like, because I think social media, like, there's an incentive to, like, overshare or be, I don't want to say over vulnerable because I feel like there's a power in vulnerability. I'm never going to discount vulnerability, but like, there's this need to like overshare everything about you so that it lends you some sort of like authenticity. So that's why I personally was on Olivia's side the whole time, because that's not something I'm just telling anybody. I'm for real. That's not something I'm telling anybody. Now, if it becomes like you mentioned, they're about to move in together, we're going to get married or whatever, then obviously now the priority is like, hey, you should know this about me now. But it's one of those things like I would not want to reveal that about myself either unless I knew for sure that like this person is about to be like a permanent fixture in my life. So I was in support of her the whole time. I was like, I understand, girl. I do. I understand.
And she obviously had like a lot of trauma from her life. And right. Let's say, I guess she was a new vampire. But I was going to say, if she's like thousands of years old, that's like a lot of trauma. But even so, like this girl has been trained all of her vampire life that people are going to break up with you and hate you because you have fangs. And so like, of course she's going to like hesitant to tell this like new girl, even though she likes her so much.
Clarkeisha, I was with you. I was like, you're prying. Stop. Like, calm down. She clearly doesn't want to talk about it. And for me, it really resonated in terms of like all the people I know who have sexual trauma in their past, especially when you're in a relationship, a romantic relationship with somebody. There's a huge conversation, right? Like, when do I disclose something that both makes me vulnerable and might cause judgment, but is important information for my sexual partner to know, you know? So I think it was really cool how they walked that line, because that's what kept coming up. I was like, wait until she's comfortable. I don't know. It's like, have some tea first. Jeez.
Yeah. Like figure it out. Cause one of my other things, and it, I love true crime. I think a lot of us horror babies do, but I have noticed that when it comes to, and I won't say any specific cases, but there are cases that are true crime where I'll see people talk about it online and they're like, well, why aren't they giving us all of the information? Why doesn't the public know? And it's like, that's not how it works. And you're not like entitled to that. And that actually messes up stuff. And it's not about you. It's about the families. And I don't know. I've been really weirded out about like the way that some people have been, and not even like podcasts, just like people who are really into it online have felt very like entitled to information that they're not entitled to, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And Jeffrey, I'm going to shoot this to you. So speaking of being entitled to information, there's that like TikTok thing that was going around on Twitter, maybe like a hot second ago, where people were like, if you don't text back in 2 hours, then it gives me anxiety. And that means you don't love me. And I'm like, team, text back whenever you freaking want. So what do you think about those boundaries between like personal, like revealing yourself to your partner, like in the episode, or to the general public? Like, where do you see that line?
I mean, what Clarkeisha said about like this overshare economy really like not triggered me, like stuck with me. I was triggered by everything you said so far, actually. Clarkeisha,
yes,
I
want
to talk to you about it. I think we falsely do feel like we are obligated to like list our trauma in tweet form and do like a large Twitter thread and like, please retweet. But really, we are not obligated to do that. And so like when we do want that from a TV show, I don't need like the list of trauma. I think that also sometimes it's more as like a, the writer in me, it's more useful and more compelling to, if you don't need to go into details, then don't. Let's say, for instance, like Olivia had like sexual trauma. It's like, I experienced sexual violence, period. Sometimes like that's enough for me. And also like, I don't need those details to like further a plot too.
Exactly. I'm like, yeah. I don't need to know how long the vampire sucked your blood for to understand that he has turned you into a creature. He became a vampire. That's enough for me. So spoilers for this episode. If you haven't watched it, go watch it, obviously. So both of the women make it out of the house alive. And there's this running trope in certain types of media where queer characters get killed off early, and it's called burying your gaze, right? You are obviously familiar with it. Some of our listeners might not be familiar with it, but it's the idea that, like, in the 80s, how often people of color died first. Now it's the queer characters that die first. And obviously it's incredibly problematic. So what do you think the series is saying by ending the episode with both Kara and Olivia not only surviving, but finding strength in each other at the end?
I mean, it really does stand out, honestly, that these two women are queer and they live. It's like, I mean, we've been trained by this trope of like barrier gaze, that when Olivia took a bath, I was freaked out because I was like, girl, put your clothes on before they kill you. I was like, I really don't want this character dying naked, right?
Every time that they would be like, oh, we're going somewhere without cell service. I was like, what are you doing? Like, why? Right. You know, and it's not just, even if it wasn't a horror movie, if my sister texted me like, hey, I'm going somewhere without cell service for 3 days, I'd be like, no, you're freaking not. Like, you're not doing that, you know?
Yeah. And like, we learn messages from media. And like, yes, like, it's, it tends to be like nowadays, like they kill the queer women characters, not the queer men.
Yes.
We kind of, for so long, Hollywood was most comfortable presenting gay men dying of AIDS, right? Like, if a gay person's dying in a movie, it's a mass appeal. But if they're like experiencing joy or happiness, which I personally don't know what that's like, but if they are on screen, that's like a niche show, right? That it can really only appeal to a queer audience. And so for this show, for them to live, like, it doesn't reinforce like the stereotype and the pattern that like queer women, you're disposable, that like you will never have a happy ending. Because for so long, we've seen just lesbian after lesbian after queer woman die on screen, and it's like, why can't we get a happy ending?
There are so many examples. Tara, like, there from Buffy, like, there are so many examples. And you know, I'm not excusing it, but it is one of those things where it's like, well, these are our this is our audience that's like really popular, and so like one of the things that we do when someone's really popular is we like straight up murder them, because like a lot of writers and show writers are terrorists. And so that is what they do. And so, yeah, it's, you know, the bury your gaze thing is always been like big for me. Clarkeisha, I know that is, I think I've seen a thread. I've read a lot of your Twitter stuff. Yeah, about you talking about that.
Well, I
just to be clear, yeah. I also follow Clarkeisha on Twitter.
Well, Danielle, I want to piggyback off that and throw this also to Clarkeisha, and please talk about that Twitter thread. But for me, the surprise came from seeing two queer women of color. I was like, I don't know who's going to die. Normally, there's just one of you, and that's the one that goes. And so seeing the two, and the fact that they were the protagonists, I was like, I love that feeling of not knowing.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was, like Jeffrey said, media, it's TV, whatever have you, like, it has trained us. Like, these are things that, you know, are also used to indoctrinate, right? So, like, as Jeffrey said, if you're used to television showing a gay man dying of AIDS, right, that's what you might expect in the real world. Let's talk about it, right? So here, seeing them both be queer, seeing one be a Black woman, right, and then there's another woman of color here, I was definitely anxious the whole time. I was just like, one of you gotta go, but I don't know which one either. I mean, that's what the setup is, right? And I'm not gonna lie to you, Kara was making me mad, because I'm like, you need to stay in this room. Like your girlfriend said, why are you coming downstairs? You're hearing noises, you're hearing squelching, all these sound effects, but you coming down the stairs for what? For what reason?
Stop opening the door.
Thank you.
And why is that door not locked? They said, someone's coming, lock the doors. I was like, why are you in your house and it's not locked to begin with?
You in the middle of nowhere. You ain't got
there's
no
self-service. Oh.
Olivia told her. Olivia was like, lock them doors. And she was like, but I don't understand. It is like, look, I know that it's scary, but it's like, look, if someone who clearly is like, hey, I'm very calm and I know what to do and I'm telling you to lock the doors and to go outside, I'm like, okay, well, my girlfriend's a vampire. And so I'm going to just let her do
it. Yeah, I'd be like, she's a vampire. She's murdering somebody. I don't care. Either way, we're following these directions. She's way too calm. We're dying to know, horror puns, what kind of final girl would you guys rather be? So this is my favorite, like, who are you in a horror movie trope game. So it's like you're the final girl who makes it to the end, or you're like, you get killed in the cold open. I think personally for me, for example, I'm the one that's like, the demons are real and they're coming to get us. And everyone's like, no, they're not. And then I die because the demon kills me. And people are like, oh yeah, demons are real because Megan's dead. So what do you guys, how do you see yourselves in a horror movie? Where's your essence represented?
Can I tell you the truth?
Yes.
I feel this deep in my bones. I want to be very precise with my words. I am going to make out alive and survive the winter. Yes, I'm a homosexual, but I'm also an Eagle Scout. And like when I lived in LA and I thought the big earthquake was coming, I had my bag packed. And I also knew instinctually that I was going to have to go out there alone because like all you other MFers were going to slow me down. And that's how I roll. I'm so sorry. I grew up in the South. Okay. It wasn't easy. And so I'm going to survive. And unfortunately, it's going to be just me. So enjoy it.
Great. I'm already dead. Clarkeisha.
Jeffrey's so right, because sometimes people slow you down, man. You just gotta go. But for me, I'm definitely that person at the beginning that's warning the protagonist, like, hey, you don't want to move into that house, or you don't want to do that or this, right? Or if there's some type of threat coming and I know it's coming, guess what? I am packing my stuff up and I'm out of here. Like, I don't have time to be no type of final girl, technically. I'm like, I gotta go. I'm gonna see y'all be easy. If you don't heed my warning, that's between you and God. But as far as I'm concerned, my conscience is clear because I told you. I did.
Like, that is 100% who I am. I'm the person who's like, I don't understand why all of you on the freeway are driving in one way in traffic when no one's going the other way. So I'm just going to drive on the shoulder in the other direction. I don't know what you're doing. Like, that's always, I'm like,
all right, Danielle,
I'm going to bring people with me in the car who aren't stupid and are just going to sit there and eat their trail mix slowly. And drink the little sips of water that you're allowed to drink until we know that we got more. But if you want to be argumentative and save the day, you go, girl. I'm running. I'm skadoozing.
See, I'm like, I know this is bad, but I have no survival skills. I'm absolutely sure I will be flattened.
I grew up military. Like, my dad was in the military. So I'm always like, I'm going to have my MREs. Like, I'm going to have, like.
I grew up a theater major. So my friends were like. You're this was the poll. They were like, who would be possessed by a demon first? And everybody goes, Megan. I was like, oh, okay. It was just unanimous. I didn't even have a choice in it.
Well, the three of us will talk about you around the fire. R.I.P.
Yeah, after Clarkeisha waves goodbye to our two final girls and I die, you and Jeffrey and Danielle can fight it out for the last.
Oh, we're not fighting. You know, we're in the car and we're leaving. And we're all like, right, we all know how much water we need to survive a day. And we're like, yeah, we know. So we do have to wrap. I could literally talk about this with y'all forever. This has been so great. Please let us know and our listeners know where they can follow you and your work online.
I am on Twitter as IWriteAllDay_, the person who took it without the underscore. They're not on Twitter anymore, but I can't get it no more. So underscore. Right. Then on Instagram, I'm at Clarkeisha Kent. And then I have my website, you know, www.clarkeishakent.com. So if all else fails, you can reach me on my website.
And you have a podcast, too.
Clarkeisha. I do. Thank you. So I'm currently on the podcast Reclaimed and Rewritten, produced by Galdem and iStudios. Y'all check it out. It's heavy, but it is good for you if you want to deep dive into American history the way it should be taught, like the good, the bad, and the ugly.
That's awesome. And I host a podcast too. It's an interview show called LGBT Q&A. That's Q&A with an ampersand. And we had our 5-year anniversary last year.
Congratulations.
So we've been around for a while. Thank you. Like 5 years ago, we were explaining what a podcast was. So it's very exciting not to do that anymore. But we've got an episode coming out with Margaret Cho next week. Oh. And I really just love the like queer elders. So like Stonewall veterans and even people older than that, like this like 94-year-old lesbian who worked with like Gloria Steinem in the 60s. And I just love our elders. So we're doing a lot of that this year. That's LGBTQ&A and Jeffrey Masters.
Thank you both so much for joining us. This was not only informative, but also crazy fun. You guys are both so funny and awesome and knowledgeable to talk to. So we really appreciate you lending your time to us today.
Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Danielle, what a fantastic conversation with Jeffrey Masters and Clarkeisha Kent.
That was so much fun. I just really love talking to people who are obviously like super into genre and like really understand the intersectional issues. And gosh, they're just amazing and charming. And this was so great.
And I also want them both and you on my horror cast team, because I'm glad you'll make it. I already know I'm dying. So I'm just, you guys are true survivors. I'm sitting there taking notes. Like, yes, wave goodbye, wave goodbye. So coming up, season three showrunner, Lisa Morales. Lisa, thank you so much for joining us today. It's so great to get the chance to talk with you. And we are really enjoying season three of Two Sentence Horror Stories. Loving the episode so far. So can you tell us, have you received any feedback from the audience, or what's the word on the street? How you feeling?
I mean, by what I can tell from Twitter and Instagram, it seems to be received positively. You know, I've got my pulse more on how the filmmakers and how the writers are responding and the crew, and they seem pretty proud and stoked and happy with the results of it. You know, it was a labor of love, and I think everyone's pretty happy with what we put out there.
Oh, that's awesome. So obviously we don't want to get into spoilers, but if you could give like a little bit of a preview, are there little teasers? Like what can viewers expect for the rest of the season?
You know, I think we put the pedal to the metal and just tried to elevate it this season and just kind of be a little crazy. You know, the goal was to take some big swings this time. We definitely did. We also took it outdoors more this season than in previous seasons. So the sets are bigger. I mean, we have Teeth was a nightmare because it was an overnighter the whole week. So we were exhausted. Toxic was cold, you know, but we just wanted to break down the four walls and go out there and just kind of put the show into different scenarios and you know, and just kind of look at horror from a different angle than in previous seasons. The budget's got a little bit bigger. The scope is a little bit bigger. So we took some swings. And I think for the most part, we hit our target.
Yeah. It comes through. It comes through.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's great. And you were talking about like, you know, having larger budgets and being able to go out and do other things and explore other stuff. And we just talked about like Teeth. So I want to talk about vampires. the vampire. Because like when I learned that we were getting an episode this season that had vampires, I was mega excited. I'm hugely into the vampire genre, like big Buffy head, whatever. Mm-hmm. And vampires and, you know, their redheaded step cousins, the werewolves, they play such a big part in some of the best of like classic horror. Like that is such a classic horror trope. So why are we doing vampires? Why now?
Why not? Vampires are sexy. I mean, they're fun, right?
Yes.
So, you know, there's a couple things to this episode. It came for a couple of reasons. I had a conversation with Liz Levine, the other executive producer who's on last season. And we were talking about what hasn't been done yet. And we hadn't told a love story through the point of view of a lesbian couple. It was in Ma, Vera Meow's episode, but that was more about the main character, and she also was meeting someone in the course of her journey. But we hadn't done a love story. You know, we've done a love story between two men, but we hadn't done a love story between two women. So that was my first thing. I'm like, okay, I want to tell a lesbian love story, number one. And then number two, when I started thinking about it, it's, you know, Airbnb, you go out, you want to rent this place in the cabin in the woods, or you want to rent a place on the beach, whatever it is, like it's so dreamlike, right? But you realize you're going to someone else's house. And you're vulnerable, you know, depending on where you are. Like, you don't know that your neighbors, you don't know if you're welcome there. And like, I kind of told the room a story. My girlfriend and I, we went up to Napa Valley and we rented this amazing house. And it was like, I don't know, like five couples. There was like 10, 12 of us. I don't remember. They all were in the main house. I was in, my girlfriend lived in Toronto, so we'd see each other like once a month, and they put me in the gatekeeper's house, or the, you know, off away from the house. Well, Napa's kind of creepy, right? So they all decided after a night of drinking that'd be really funny. You know, I'm down the road, down the driveway at 4 o'clock in the morning, start creeping around the cabin where I was in and start knocking on the windows and putting their fingernails on the wall. Yeah, they did that.
Nope. True story. Absolutely not. Nope. Absolutely not.
Absolutely. I'm literally freaking out. I'm trying to call the house. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. No one's answering. We're tripping out. We're ready to run to our cars and go into town and find a hotel at 4 o'clock in the morning, like crazy people. And I grab a knife. I grab a steak knife, and I'm ready to go to the balcony that overlooked kind of like a little drop, and open the window and start just going stabbing the air. I could have killed somebody that night.
I mean, it kind of sounds like it'd be their fault, though.
Well, you know, play stupid games, win stupid prizes.
Right? But it's also your friends. But it was a moment that I had not forgotten. So when I pitched that idea to the room, that's kind of how the story came, you know, and it's all it came together. I mean, that was kind of, you know, the impetus for it, about like a personal experience that I had lived through, a desire to tell a story about two women. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. we live in a time of tribalism right now. You know, you're on that mm-hmm. side, I'm on this side, black, white, you know, we wanted it to play with the audience's bias. And so that when you meet these kind of, you know, biker looking dudes that seem completely tropey, you think that they are being discriminatory towards this lesbian couple and a mixed race couple, and they're not welcome in this backwoods kind of area, which of course is false. It has nothing to do with it, but we're leaning into that trope, and then we're subverting it, which is what we do on the show a lot. Like, you think it's a story, it's a racist story, but it's really not. It's a story about these men feel threatened by this woman who enters their territory, who's not actually just a woman. She's also a vampire. She's more powerful than them. So they see her as the foe. We don't know that until much later, that she can destroy all of them. Oops. Mm-hmm. Spoiler alert.
Watch the freaking episode if you haven't yet.
But that was fun, to be able to just kind of play with our biases, the audience's biases, what you think the story is going to be, but only to find out later it's not at all that story. It's kind of a strange kind of coming out story. And for our character, where you realize that she is filled with all these fears, that she's now put her girlfriend and her into a very dangerous situation for not being honest with herself, with not being honest with her partner, because ultimately she is scared of being rejected. So it's a, you know, and different kind of coming out story, but it's one where it's still a story about being your authentic self and finding your way through that, so that, you know, you can be two people in a relationship.
Oh yeah, I legit got crazy. There were definitely moments where I was like, oh no, oh yes, oh no. So speaking of, again, all
get
of-
Get the hell out feelings, of there.
Yes, also that's a big part. And
why are you, go, tell her the truth, leave.
Tell her the truth. And also, like, you know, when she keeps saying, why are we going to someplace with no cell service? Maybe like, listen. But so we did really connect with the couple in that episode. I especially did. And it leads us into this like world that's like strange and dangerous and not our world that we currently live in, at least as far as we know, you know, who knows. But the couple, they are both people of color, which is great. So why do you think it's so important that this story was told through such an intersectional lens?
I mean, there's a, you know, the whole conceit of the show. You know, all of our episodes are told through this intersectional lens. We're designed to kind of subvert classic horror tropes and centering, you know, BIPOC and LGBTQI. That's a lot of letters. People as the center of our
just
story.
Just all the letters.
Yeah, all of them. And putting them in the center of the story, which normally in mainstream television, the Latin character, the gay character, the black character is killed within 5-10 minutes in horror movies. Mm-hmm. What we do, what Vera Miao has done an amazing thing in the show, is center us, you know, all of us on the screen right now, we are the centers of our own stories, and we're and we're exploring our lives, our cultural specificity, our specific political viewpoints, whatever it is. We're telling that story through our lens and our worldview as compared to always being a sidekick. And that's what I love about the show. It's why I wanted to be on the show, an opportunity to just tell, you know, my friend's stories, so to speak. And we get to explore it from a different lens, and we get to play with different biases as a result of it, you know, and whether it's the audience's bias, the writer's bias, all of us to kind of explore that and kind of deconstruct it, which is fascinating. And it's challenging as a writer to be able to deconstruct all those different norms and tropes and experiences and just kind of, you know, tell a story from a different lens, and it makes it different. We don't get to often see mixed race lesbian couples or gay couples on screen. They're usually always white or white with somebody. So that was, you know, it was important to us to show, you know, two people of color in this role and all that, that brings to it, you know, and
everything. And as a horror fan with my horror fan bias, I'm constantly clocking like who's supposed to die next, according to the trope. And what was so great about this episode and what I like about the show really is that there were two queer women of color leads. So you're like, well, who's going to die? I can't tell. They're both like equally weighted in terms of horror stereotypes. Mm-hmm. And what is so fun about each episode is they take it like just like one twist past what you would expect, right? Like you would expect like one reveal, but then there was this like double reveal. Mm-hmm. So speaking of all these layers in the episode Teeth, so we have this fear of others, like quite literally a wild beast scratching at the door, but also it explores this other fear that you talked about, abandonment and loneliness and revealing yourself, coming out, right? So how were you able to let those elements of both like the outside monster and the inner threat, like the outside fear and the inner fear, how are you able to layer those together? Like how did they inform each other? Speak to that a little bit.
I mean, you start off, we knew from the beginning that there's going to be an outside monster that was going to bring out the inside monster. You know, we needed that external stimulus to bring out the internal stimulus. That was always the goal in this piece. But ultimately, it was a very simple thing that we were asking. It's like, are you going to still love me if you find out who I really am? That's it. That's all that informed the story. And it's such a basic universal fear that we have. You know, we've got a lot of bells and whistles to get us there in this story. But ultimately, it's that moment when I'm giving a spoiler alert, that moment toward the end where they decide what is tomorrow going to look like. And they each have to make a decision quietly as to, can we get past this moment? Can we grow from here? And in a perfect world, in the fairy tales, that yes, you're going to accept me with all my warts and all my flaws, and you're still going to love me. If anything, you're going to love me more because I'm being my authentic self. That's the story we're telling. And, you know, the challenges are always space on the page. How much space do we have to tell the story? Because we still need to have the wild ride. We want to still have the thrills. Mm-hmm. We want to, you know, scare the hell out of poor Naomi King as Kara and throw her in this house with sounds. You know, the soundscape in this pier in this episode is really, really important because all the drama is happening outside and we've got this poor young woman in this house terrified to death. Scared, more scared as the story progresses of her partner than she is of the monsters that have appeared at her door because she's been lied to and she's been deceived. And at the end of the story, we have to find a way to bring these two women together.
Thank you so much, Lisa. This has been so great. We are obviously huge fans of your work, both here and I mean, me personally, Queen Sugar,
I
too.
Love Queen Sugar.
Yeah, I was like, she's the queen. So we can't help but wonder, what stories are you hoping to tell next?
I mean, I love underdog stories. I love outsider stories, you know, stories that explore our shared humanity and our shared struggle. That's what's fun as a writer to kind of dig into and how we get in our own way when we're telling those stories or sabotaging our, you know, the Breaking Bad model. Like, I just want to provide security for my family, but every single decision I make is just putting them more and more and more in danger. I mean, that's what, as writers, that's what's exciting and turns us on and makes us want to stay up late and you know, work into the night. Those are the kind of stories that excite me. So I feel that I'm now at a place where I can tell those stories and thrust it into the mainstream and kind of explore that cultural specificity that for so many years of television and films has been ignored and regulated to the side, you know, as we said, as sidekicks that get killed off in the first act or the second act. We're the centers of our own stories now, that we're in a place now as television has exploded that we get to do it. We get to share it. And I think, as we said earlier, that leads to understanding and universality between all of us, little by little.
Oh, that's so dope. I'm excited for all of that. Thank you so much, season three showrunner Lisa Morales, for taking the time to hang out with us today. This was amazing. We're so happy to have you. I want to have you on every episode, but I know that you're busy, but we will. But you're busy, but we will.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you guys.
Okay, well, that was an amazing conversation. I love this episode so much, and I love that we got to talk to all of these people who are way smarter and funnier than me. It was so good.
Not me, Danielle. I'm perfect. No, just kidding.
Yes, yes. No imposter syndrome here.
No, it was so cool to hear showrunner Lisa's perspective on the episode that she wrote. And awesome to hear the perspectives of Clarkesha and Jeffrey. And they are definitely funnier than me. I will say that. They're definitely funnier than me.
Yeah, go follow all of them on all their socials. Check out, obviously, season three, because this is amazing. Thank you so much to Lisa Morales, Clarkesha Kent, and Jeffrey Masters for this amazing conversation that I could have gone on for, like, 20 hours.
This is Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast. Catch you next time.
Thank you for listening to Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast.
Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts so you never miss an episode.
Two Sentence Horror Stories, the podcast is a Stage 13 original series hosted by me, Danielle Radford.
And me, Megan Rosati. Don't forget to watch Season 3 of Two Sentence Horror Stories on the CW and CWTV.com and stream Seasons 1 and 2 on Netflix.
Check out more on the show at stage13.com and be sure to follow Two Sentence Horror Stories on Instagram at Two Sentence Horror Stories for the latest updates on the podcast and show, and on our Facebook page at Two Sentence Horror Stories to connect with other fans of the show and share your thoughts on this season.